Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, let's keep talking baseball. We've done it all morning. It's a fun thing to do. Joining us right now, the president of baseball operations for the Minnesota Twins, Derek Falvey. And Derek, I wonder if you ever thought as a sixth grader looking at your Bartolo Colon baseball card that you'd someday sign it.
He's been around a long time. Speaks to a heck of a career and a guy who really loves the game.
How do you when you evaluate a guy like that, you know his past body of work, you know that he struggled a little bit this year. How do you assess what goes into that decision?
You know what, I think when you're looking at a guy like Bartolo who's had so much success, and you're trying to identify what made him successful in years past and maybe what went a bit awry at the beginning of this year. We felt like a lot of the underlying elements to how he pitched were similar to past years. Certainly, command had and walk rate went up a little bit, but we felt like there were some elements here that could warrant some bounce back. So with the need for us with depth starting pitching, we felt like it was a good opportunity.
Anything in his contract? We know he's going to Rochester. It says he stayed at Rochester a maximum amount of time. A lot of people speculating if things work, might have him up in mid-month, perhaps even for the Yankee series.
What we'll do, he's been down a little bit of time in terms of game action, although he has been throwing and staying fresh with bullpens. We want to make sure that we put him in the best position to get a runway to start up here when necessary. So we just want to be thoughtful about that. We'll work with him, make sure he feels good, and when he does, I'm sure we'll make that decision.
What's the conversations like? You know, you pick up the paper and you try to assess who's in and who's out. Well, half the league is in the wild card race, at least, and that changes the buyer or seller definition, and pitching obviously is the premium. Is the buzz starting a little bit right now, Derek?
You know, it's starting maybe more on the hot stove market and on your show outside than it is within the game for those reasons, as you just mentioned. There's a lot of teams that are still, you know, with a good 7 to 10 day stretch, could be right back in it or potentially go in the other direction. So I think it's a little bit of a wait and see approach for most clubs right now. Typically this starts to pick up after this All-Star break here. So I anticipate those conversations really heating up in the coming weeks.
Derek, there's so many things about baseball that the true fans are kind of cool. I love the crowd during the 11 pitch at bat for Zach Granite yesterday. You talk about knowing what's going on and appreciating how he hung in there. I thought that was a real highlight.
No doubt. There's a few moments that happen in baseball games, even for me that have watched so many in person over the course of my career now, that stand out, that are special. And there's nothing like a kid getting a chance at his first major league opportunity. I'm sure his heart was racing about as fast as it could possibly race. But to have the crowd engaged at that level, it was special for Zach, his family, and certainly for the fans there.
Derek, one of your mentors, of course, is Terry Francona, and he was on the sidelines with a heart condition that they've treated in the hospital. But how does that – this guy seems like he's just so immensely popular throughout the league. How did that strike you and when you heard that?
Well, I certainly first level of was concerned. So I called him and I talked with Chris Antonetti and others in Cleveland, and we chatted. And the good thing was that his sense of humor had not waned. He made good jokes about potentially being allergic to the bench coach, his longtime friend Brad Mills, or otherwise. But it's a serious issue and something that we're thankful is in the past. He's in good spirits, and as you said, he's an immensely popular guy around baseball, and he means a lot to me.
Derek, we know you've got a weather meeting in a couple of minutes, trying to decide if you're going to be clear for that afternoon game today, but I wanted to ask you about your two top draft choices, at least the two position players. Boy, both off to good starts. A lot of speculation you might be moving them up.
Yeah, we've been really happy with this draft class. Royce has certainly gone down and been everything we thought he'd be and more, and really not just the player. We knew the talent. We knew the ability. We knew he'd have some success, but also just who he's been as a teammate, a leader. I think he's made an impact on other players down there, and Brent Rooker, too. You know, both guys, really mature leadership potential with great baseball ability. So we're excited about them. We'll make the decision with respect to timelines and moves thoughtfully. I think these guys, you know, that we want to make sure they get a good base for development that they can move forward with. So let's let them have some success here for a little bit and then make some decisions later this summer.
I like that 10-day disabled list. It seems to be a comfortable spot that, you know, with Joe Mauer, where it's not too long, and yet you can, Vargas can come up and try to make an impact. Has that changed the game a little bit in terms of quicker to designate somebody there because you know it's not that long?
Absolutely. You know, and you just pointed out a perfect example. Joe's a guy who has had a great first half, and we know what he means to this club. And when he had a little bit of lower back tightness and, you know, couldn't quite get it loose in the next couple of days, I think if we had thought through maybe 15 days at a different part of the season, we would have held off a bit longer. But because we had the All-Star break mixed in here, he gets a chance to be down for this weekend and then one game on the back end when we return. It gives us a great opportunity to get him healthy for the second half, and I'm happy we have that option now.
Derek, crowds are picking up. Obviously, a lot of your fans in this year are kind of looking at the skies today. Any early report on the chances of getting that game in?
I think we're in a good spot. You know, it looks like there's been some light rain here this morning, and hopefully it'll pass through by about noontime. But I'll get a check in here with Matt Hoy and our ballpark operations group to make sure we're in a good spot. But we're looking forward to getting this one and taking a few days here to everyone to recharge the batteries for a great second half.
Do you go to the All-Star game?
You know, I don't. And a lot of front office types typically try and find a little bit of downtime with their families during the next couple of days. Just because
that used to be a time in the old days. You hear the stories about that's when you start. That's when the trade talks to start. But that doesn't happen anymore, does it?
Not as much anymore. With so much email and text and phone communication, you can do most of it from your home city. And I think we owe it to our wives and children and otherwise to try and take a couple of days before it gets too busy.
Good decision on the home front. Thanks for joining us on Short Notice. I always appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Enjoy it. Have a great Sunday.
All right. It's Derek Falvey back with more after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, the Twins are heading into the All-Star break. One more game, that's today, and we're looking at the weather. It looks pretty good, like the rain may get here tonight. Starting pitchers today, Kyle Gibson for the Twins against Ubaldo Jimenez for Baltimore, and we had a chance to catch up with Gibson. Let's listen in.
What's it like to come out to the park when you're feeling confident, feeling good about your team? You've endured a few years here. You guys haven't come here expecting to win necessarily. What's it like this year that way?
We got a different mindset in here, and I think it has a lot to do with our veteran leadership and, you know, Castro, Jimenez, Mauer, Dozier, all those guys. I'm missing people, but, you know, all those guys, you know, we've really developed a mindset of, you know, we're going to win today and we're going to compete today, and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I think we learned a lot in 2015, you know, from moving on from each loss and celebrating wins, and I think we're taking that into this year. And we got a lot of the same guys still in the locker room, and, you know, we're not forgetting about that. You know, that's why we do what we do after every win and you know, trying to make sure that we're celebrating that. But, you know, it's a good feeling when you know that you're confident in the group of guys you have and you're confident in the way you're playing.
When you pitch against Baltimore, it's always amazing to me because they have so many big guys. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you see that when you pitch. Looking going, holy cow, man, he's big. He's big. You know, it looks intimidating when you watch it.
Sure.
Do you see that or do you see the glove?
No, I mean, I always definitely know the hitter that's up there. Mm-hmm. You know, I've faced them quite a few times. So you're, you know, thinking back to how you pitched them and you know that, you know, they're leading the league in homers basically every year and you know their offensive approach. And sometimes you can use that against them and, you know, sometimes they get you and you know, they take four or five good swings a game and hit them out of the park. But, you know, they're a fun team to face, not because you know you're going to throw well, but it's just, you know they got a good lineup. And anytime that you can go out there and face some of the best lineups and guys that can swing the bat, you know, you challenge yourself and try to go out there and throw a good game and see what you can do against them.
See if you can give them to chase.
We'll see. You know, sometimes they've done a good job at times of, you know, being patient, you know, and forcing me to really work hard. And, you know, sometimes they go out there swinging first pitch and are aggressive. So you kind of got to read the game and read, you know, their approach. And, you know, if they're going to be really aggressive, then try to use that against them. If they're going to be patient, then, you know, you can't let them use that against you and get behind. So you just try to read the situation and read the hitter and, you know, just try to execute pitches.
Last, Target Field obviously was not a home run hitting ballpark when they built it, et cetera, and it's slowly kind of become one. What do you see? Why is the ball traveling? Because they don't just travel. Some of these are going second deck. They're going long ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know the physics of it, but I'm sure there's people who have studied parks and say it really kind of settles in the wind patterns. But, you know, I think there's different times of day as well that it becomes definitely a pitcher's park and, you know, certain times of day where it's more of a hitter's park. But I think a lot of the homers, I don't know how many we've given up this year, but we just haven't really pitched well, I don't feel like, when we've been at home. And, you know, obviously the home record probably, you know, talks to that as well. But, I think our offense, has been hitting well. I'd have to check the offensive numbers at home too, but I just feel like, we've been giving up more homers here at home than we have on the road, and that's, probably why we've been winning more on the road too. So I don't know that necessarily, is definitely, a hitter's park or definitely a pitcher's park. Yeah. I think it's pretty fair in general. I think you have parts of the park that are hitter friendly and parts of the park that are pitcher friendly. So I think it's just probably been a wash more than anything.
Like your buddy Dozier says, you don't hit home runs, they pitch home runs.
part of it. I think hitters do a good job of hitting good pitches. But I'm glad to hear Doge say that and give the pitcher some credit. So, appreciate it.
All right, take a quick break, and then we'll talk to Roy Smalley. Roy also has some All-Star memories, doing a great job on the Twins broadcast, and we'll talk to him right after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we are back. I have a chance to talk to Roy Smalley. If you've been watching the broadcast and the game, you had a chance to hear Roy's color commentary. Mike and I were talking during the break, some really interesting breakdowns of what's going on between pitcher and batter. Roy, we want to start by asking about your All-Star experiences, but I want to compliment you on the landscaping. It looks looking really good.
Don't tell me you did it either, Roy.
Oh, he's out there every day breaking his back, man.
You can't believe the amount of work that took, and I got it all done in about a day.
Nobody does it better. Roy's a neighbor, if people are wondering, and the landscaping looks great. Mike?
Roy, I love your analysis of hitters because what it does is it allows people a peek inside as to how technical and how every pitch matters so much. What have you seen from the maturation of Miguel Sano in terms of his approach to the plate?
You know, Miguel's a pretty smart hitter. He's smarter than a lot of people give him credit for. He's not just an incredibly strong young man with great talent. He also is starting to get the idea of how to figure pitchers and how they're going to be pitching him. But, the main thing with him is that strength and talent. And when he finally gets it in his mind that the center field fence for him is really not a whole lot farther away than the left field fence. And if he kind of takes Miguel Cabrera as his role model and uses the whole field, those ballparks they can't hold him. They're just too small for him. He plays in smaller ballparks than most of the rest of the guys out there.
Good observation, Roy. You guys are supposed to be neutral, but I thought I could feel you pulling for Zach Granite last night.
Oh, you bet. I'll just tell you, if we're supposed to be neutral, then they better fire me, because I'm really not. I'm pulling for the Twins to do well and all the players to do well, which doesn't mean I won't say if they're not doing well what it is. but I do want them. It's just more fun here in town with the hometown team is doing well, and I was pulling for Zach Granite. It was such a nice moment last night that the 28,000 Twins fans there recognized what he has done in Triple A, and especially the fact that it's 460 or something the month of June. Got a reward for that by being called up, and the fans rewarded him for what he was doing down there. That was really a cool moment. I was really pulling for him to do something special.
Roy, how do you assess him now, hitter to hitter, as to what he has, and does he have the skill set, what he needs? Does he just need at bats, or is it more than that? What does he need to do?
Well, we really don't know yet. It's one thing to be tearing up AAA pitching, and it's another thing up here at this level. So we need to see at bats and see what it is that he does at the plate. He needs to see big league pitching on a regular basis. What I did notice about him is, and I mentioned it on the broadcast yesterday, his swing is very uncomplicated. It's very direct to the ball, very simple. Hands go back, hands bring the big end forward on a pretty good plane at the down the line of flight of the ball. So it's not hard to see why, with that very, very simple, good approach at the ball, that he was tearing it up down there. It'll be fun to watch him mature up here.
Roy, we had a chance to talk to Terry Steinbach at the top of the show about his All-Star memories. What are some of your All-Star memories?
Oh, what a great experience that is. I'm happy for the three Twins that are going. I hope they enjoy every single second of it. Memories for me, first of all, I was leading off for the American League in the batting order. We were the home team in there in Seattle, American League town. So to be the first guy out there after after the manager to go run out to the sidelines was really, really cool. I'll tell you, going out there to take my position at shortstop for the start of the top of the first inning, and Carl Yastrzemski's on first throwing me ground balls in between, you know, to get ready, and my double play partner was Frank White, and I look over at third, next to me is George Brett, and my my college buddy Freddie Lynn's playing center field, and Reggie's out there, and Jim Wright's out there, and I'm thinking, man,
wow.
This is pretty cool. I'm liking what I'm seeing all around me. This is pretty fun.
Wow, and that was the old dome at Seattle when it was new and chic, right?
Yeah, it was still relatively new, and you know, leading off and getting up there.
Yeah, who was pitching for the National League?
Steve Carlton.
Oh boy,
you know,
a future teammate.
And all of a sudden, the exhilaration turns to, oh my God, it's lefty out there.
How far can this team go? We're going back to the Twins again, Roy. I think most people listening in this morning, if you had said at the beginning of the year, they'd be over 500 at All-Star break, people would have said, you're nuts.
Well, that's absolutely true. And they've had 3 years in a row that people would have said, you're nuts if you'd have predicted it. You know, I don't think anybody thought 83 wins in 2015. Nobody predicted that debacle last year, and now these young kids are playing like crazy and giving us all something to watch and have fun with. They will go as far as their starting pitching will go. That we got. There's some young kids coming on now. Barrios gives them a chance to win. Of course, Irvin Santana's an all-star. Mejia, I think, gives them a chance to win. And if Kyle Gibson, it looks like he might be turning things around a little bit. If that's the case, they have a chance because these young hitters just never give up. They're grinding out a pass, inning to inning, up and down the lineup, and they're playing terrific defense. If the pitching holds up at all, if these young guys pitch the second half any good at all, then they're going to hang in there.
It looks like, Roy, at least for now, that with Taylor Rogers and Kinsler, you've got that eighth and ninth inning set up almost on a nightly basis at a comfort level that they haven't had for years.
It looks really good right now. Both those guys have developed really terrific stuff, and they're starting, especially Taylor Rogers now, starting to throw the ball where he wants to and getting right-handed hitters out. So you're right. Maxie, it looks really, really good, but you can't go to them every night, obviously. And you have to have the starting pitching, pitching into the seventh inning on a relatively irregular basis. And that's going to be the key, is not wearing down that bullpen.
Roy, last question: with Colon coming back, you starting to get the itch?
The one thing that we know for sure is that I feel confident in is I can still hit better than he does. So I don't think I'm coming back, but the good thing is if he gets back here, he'll have a designated hitter for him. That's going to be good for all of us not to have to watch.
Roy, keep up the great work. Really fun to listen to you on the broadcast.
I appreciate that very much. Thanks, guys.
Echo that. All right, it's Roy Smalley. Sid's are ready to go, so let's take a break. Come back more after the Sports Huddle. Sid, Dave, and Mike. Well, I think we have been exclusively baseball for the first hour and 2 minutes so far. Time to talk Gopher football. Sid, PJ Fleck standing by right now.
PJ, how many of those 22 guys who missed spring practice are now healthy and will be ready August, I think, off first when you start practice?
Well, they're getting there, Sid. You know, not all of them just yet, but the majority of them will start training camp with us. And then we'll get pretty much everybody back by the first game. But I think I mentioned this last week, and the only concern you have is, you know, they haven't had a lot of training. You know, they've been rehabbing. Now they're finally cleared. But in terms of the full training, that's hard to be able to get. So we've got some challenges ahead with them, but we're looking forward to those guys getting back on the field.
Have you decided to use any of the scholarships you got? Really mean?
Not yet, still, Sid. No, we've got to be very, very cautious of how we use them, but very particular how we use them. Because those scholarships, once you have one, it's gone, right, for the next 4 years. So you've got to be really careful how you use that. You know, so we might even bump them back to 2019. Might use one of them in 18. I don't know yet, Sid. But however we use them will be well thought out, and it'll be the best plan for the future of Gopher football.
How do you think the quarterback fight's going to be to start? Does it look like one guy stands out, or don't you know yet?
Well, we don't know yet. I'll be honest with you. We don't know yet. The quarterbacks are very competitive. I thought Kirk Ciarca is doing a tremendous job of developing our quarterbacks and our system. You know, year one's a little bit more difficult than every other year because you're just learning the system. It's very tough to master a brand new offensive system or defensive system or special team system in 1 year. You're learning. So the word mastery is what we want our quarterbacks to be able to have of our offense. However, I don't know if that'll happen in year one, but we got to get them as close to it as we possibly can.
Do you look for any of the freshmen to move in as offensive and defensive tackle?
Well, I think this year, defensive tackle, I think we'll be okay. It's, the problems are next year, you know, when all those seniors graduate and there's zero depth right now behind them except for freshmen. So we've got our work cut out for us in the recruiting battle. But I'm a high school, I love to recruit high school student athletes. So next year on the D-line, you might see 3-4 starters that are all true freshmen. I'm okay with that. You might take your lumps, but eventually those freshmen become sophomores, and then they're juniors and seniors, and they got 4 years of experience. So I'm willing to do that. I've done that at Western Michigan. I'm willing to do that again on the offensive side of the ball. Again, I think we're okay maybe for a year, but then we got to get a lot younger before we get older. And the 2019 class, you might even see next year, the 2018 or 19 class, 18 class. I'm sorry. You might see some guys contribute next year on the offensive line. But this year, we might have some guys redshirt and get them ready for the following few years.
Have you decided what side of the field your team's going to play?
Well, yeah, I'll be honest with you, Sid. One of the main things that I've listened to of numerous people, whether it's fans, whether it's administration, whether it's players, is moving our sideline to the other side, and that's what I'd like to do. And so I think we're going to be on the other side that we haven't been in the past. I don't know. I wasn't here in the past. I just think the side that I'd like to play on is a side that that I'd like to have as a sideline, but I think it gives you a lot of advantages as well. So we'll probably be on a different sideline.
How much power do you give the offensive and defensive coordinators when it comes to game time?
Well, they have basically almost all of it. You know, I manage the situations, the fourth downs, what we're going to do on those different calls, you know, managing the game, the time management with the quarterbacks. So for me, I let my coaches coach. I mean, they're the ones that they spend the most amount of time on football. We do all of our game planning ahead of time. They know all my concerns. They know all my ideas. They know what I want to do going into a game. And then they execute it. And then we communicate throughout the entire game. So, but I let them coach. Rob Smith's one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. Coach Ciarca is one of the best offensive coordinators in the country. And Coach Wanger, our special teams coordinator, is the best in the country. But if there are certain situations or we do something that's unique, I'm probably the one calling that. But other than that, I love my coaches. I love the way they coach. I love how they coach. But we've been together for a long time, so we know each other. And at this point in our relationship, that I let them coach the way that I know they can.
PJ, Mike Max here. Do you make substitutions very often from where you sit, or do you allow that to them? Do you macro manage it and then from time to time say, this guy doesn't look? Are you evaluating all the time that way?
Yeah, you are. You know, I think the one thing is that prior going into a game in terms of substitutions, you always talk about how many reps you want the running backs to get. I want him to get this many carries and this many carries, but that changes. You're always going to go with the hot hand. You're always going to go with what's working. And that there's no different in terms of plays, but also the players is the same thing. So, but for our substitutions, we do all that ahead of time. But yeah, we keep an eye on every player. You know, we want to make sure one, they're always safe. They're always feeling good. If they have an injury, are they playing to their absolute top ability? Or is there somebody else that could be better at that position because they are struggling or they're having a bad game or they have an injury? But I'm one to kind of let my players fail I am. I think failing equals growth. They learn by that. I'm not one of those guys. He has a bad quarter and you yank him. I'm not one of those guys because it is kids. These are children. These are young adults that you're working with, and they're not perfect. I'm not perfect. They're not perfect, but they're going to continue to learn. And the more they fail, the more they're going to learn, and the more armor and the scars are going to build, which is really going to help them in the future, especially when you have a very young football team, which we will have a little bit this year, but next year will be incredibly young, and the year after that will still be pretty young. So we'll get there eventually. But like I said, I for substitutions, you know, we play it by ear.
You think Buffalo will give you a test in that opening game?
Well, yeah. I mean, Lance is a phenomenal football coach. The reason why he's won so many national championships at Whitewater and what he's been able to do, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him and got to know him. He's a close personal friend. We've known each other over the course of the last few years in the Mid-American Conference, and I know that they'll be ready for us. And the one thing I'll tell you about our opponents, though, Sid, and this is the way I approach most games, is that it's all about us. You know, it's about how we play. We have to play our best. We're not going to worry too much about our opponents in terms of them. We're going to game plan them. We're going to put everything that we need to do in terms of like everybody else. But in terms of worrying about our opponents or looking at our schedule and going, oh, gosh, we got this team, or this team, or, you know, we should be favored in this game. We don't do that. It's about us. We have to play our best football on every given Saturday or Thursday when we play. Or we have the opportunity to get beat by anybody. And that's a fact. So that's the way we focus. We focus on us. We focus on the process of changing our best to get better every single day. And that's all we think about. That's all we worry about. And that's what we focus our team's energy on.
PJ, among the things new for you this year is going to be a whole new set of officials. How do you get along with officials? I mean, you don't know most of these guys before the game. You go out and talk them up a little bit, chat them. I mean, how do you get familiar and comfortable with officials you haven't worked with before?
That's a great question. I'm not sure about the relationships with head coaches and officials. I don't think they necessarily help you in the game. But I will say this, is that I love communicating with our officials, if that makes sense. And I love for them to communicate with me. I think the one thing, just like any relationship, especially during business, right, which would be game day, all I ask for is elite communication. Right? I know there's going to be calls. I know there's going to be calls against us and for us. I just want elite communication. And I want the game to be officiated fairly, right? And that's what you want to be able to see as a head football coach. And our officials in the Big Ten do an elite job of that. Bill Carollo is one of the best in the country at developing, but also recruiting the best officials to come to the Big Ten. We're very familiar with how he's been able to do it because the Big Ten and the MAC were affiliated with their officials. And I love the Mid-American Conference officials. I did. I had a great relationship with all of them. They communicated really well with me. Did they make every call perfect? No. But that's part of the game. That'll always be part of the game. Just like umpires and balls and strikes. Sometimes that strike zone's a little bit bigger. Sometimes it's a little smaller. Same thing in football.
Well, what's the definition?
I'm really proud of the Big Ten. Really proud of our officials, and I look forward to working with them.
What's the definition of a great official in terms of the way they run a game?
Well, I think it's consistency and communication. I think two C's. That's my opinion. Okay. And consistency, communication. And I mean by everything. I don't mean just by the call. I mean by the energy. I mean how you officiate the first quarter to the fourth quarter. The energy that you're putting in it, your demeanor, how you talk to a head football coach, right? Or does it get emotional really fast? You know, and I think the consistency of people, not only just in officials, but in people in general. I mean, you have a very inconsistent person, you're probably not going to hire that person. If you have a very consistent person, you probably are. Consistency and communication are the two C's that I look for. Just in terms of hiring people, but also when you start talking about officials, I think those are two very, very important qualities that they must have and that I look for when I go into a game. And that's all I ask them for in our pregame meetings is, you know, be consistent. Whatever you're doing, just be consistent so I can adapt to that. Because there are times there's a lot more holding calls going on. They're watching this a little bit more. Okay, we're not going to run that scheme as much. Okay, because they keep getting us on this, and every time we call that play, we're doing this because of the way we're cutting or the way that we're down blocking or whatever it is. So I have to be able to adjust to that too. So I think you have to be really dialed in as a head coach to be able to adjust the officials too.
How many commitments do you have for 2018, and where does that rate in the country?
Right now we have 19 commitments. I think that puts us second in the country in terms of number of commitments. You know, it's not a race, Sid, but I think one thing it does show is how many people want to be Minnesota Golden Gophers now. Like, they cannot wait to be Golden Gophers. And we'll probably get some more commitments here in the next 2 weeks. We're very proud of that. That's not, like I said, not a race. We're not looking at the just the stars. We're looking at the five-star people, and that's what we want. Because to win a championship that hasn't been done in 50 years, you've got to get the right people that can handle the failing, that can handle some of the growing pains, that can handle some of the doubters, that can handle the criticism of different things when you're really different. And those are the type of players we're recruiting.
How many? Thank you very much, PJ. You got people pretty excited about Gopher football. Can't wait till it starts. Thank you a lot and for being on the show. Mr. Murray loves it when you come in with your lovely bride. Thank you.
You got it, Sid. I'm excited too, man. Keep rowing the boat, Sky Yamaha. Thanks for having me on.
All right, it's PJ Fleck back with more after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, we are back on. It's not often that we get a chance to talk to an all-star, and Miguel Sano joins us right now. And Sid, we're getting ready with his headset there. Mike, you want to jump in?
Miggy, did you hit any home runs in batting practice today?
No, I don't hit batting practice. Okay.
I ask him that every day when I see him in the clubhouse, so it's an ongoing joke. Sid Hartman, say hello to Miguel Sano.
Mr. Sano, what is the big difference with last year and this year? Would you tell us about that?
You know, every day I try to come to the field and try to do my job, play my game, and try to hit the ball hard. And I never try to do too much.
Did anybody person help you get ready for this year?
Yeah, I've been working for Fernando Tatis, and he worked with me for like few months in DR in the all season, and you know, he tried to put me ready to come here and play my game.
You were in a little slump there for a while, then you came out of it. How do you come out of a slump like the one you had?
You know, I work, you know, every day, and I try to do come here and try to see the ball in him and play my defense, and you know, I try to do the little thing in the game, and those things put me the game look like a simple player, you know.
How big is this All-Star selection for you?
It's really big for me because my first All-Star, and I've been working my whole life for that, and I got one of my, like my mom said, I want to see you in the All-Star one day, and then she can see me this year, and you know, I'm so really happy about that.
Are you looking forward to the home run derby?
You know, I know I don't even think about home run derby, but you know I got selected for the home run derby and the MVP. I try to hit normal VP. I don't try to like hit a bomb something like that. When I be in Miami and I got a chance to hit in the home run derby, I try to hit a homers, but here I only focus and play my game.
How much has a twin batting coach helped you in your career?
He helped me a lot. Him and Rudy, and you know, Rudy, he taught me a lot of good things. And James too, the hitting coach, and you know, he tried to help me every day. Try to give me like a good information, and I want to say thank you to those guys that helped me.
You have improved so much in your fielding. How did that come about? How did you become such a defensive player?
Yeah, because, you know, everything comes with the work. If you work hard, you can see a lot of change in your life. So this is what I've been doing my whole life. And every day is year by year. So if you work hard every day, you can see the difference.
Who worked over there on the defense? Who helped you on defense?
Fernando Tatis, third base for the Cardinals. He played a long time.
How about Miguel? You play first base and you play it very comfortably. Did you have much experience at first base?
You know, I don't have experience first base, but it's simple. It's like a play in third. Like the only difference is you need to run to the base and try to stay low sometimes, stay up sometimes low. But you know, I think I can be better if I start working more in first.
Miggy, you spent a lot of time in early batting practice hitting the ball to right field, and you hit a lot of home runs to right field during early batting practice. How is that coming, that whole process of using the whole field?
Tati teach me that. They try to hit the whole field and try to hit more right the middle. Because if I can control the ball right to the middle, it's easy to control the ball to the left field.
Miguel, what was it like on the bench when Buxton scored from first on the single?
You know, he's a speed guy in the team. It's unbelievable. He's getting caught with a base hit to the middle. And, you know, it's crazy. He's really fast.
Mr. Sano, thank you very much for being on the show. And for being on the show, we got you a certificate, the best taken in the town, Murray. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, it's Miguel Sano playing today, and then on his way to the All-Star game. We'll be back right after this. Sports Huddle, Sid, Dave, and Mike. All right, we are back. We have had no opportunity to check out text messages. We are way behind. I'm going to try to sort them out a little bit here. One of them said, Sid, how are you getting around these days? They might be impressed. Mike and I were commenting. Yeah. He's got a walker, and he forgets about it. He's walking around the studio.
Did you see that earlier?
I did indeed.
He threw the walker to the side. And then we get these soundproof doors, which are heavier than heavy.
Yep.
He bulldozed both of those two, went to his office and found some cassette tapes. Sid, you could run on the senior sprint, the track, the 100 meters, I think, right now.
So I think the answer to that question, how Sid getting along is outstanding from a mobility standpoint. Sid, here's a question that I assume I know the answer to, but I've never asked you. Somebody said, ask Sid if he got to know Willie Mays during his short season with the Minneapolis Millers.
Minneapolis Millers?
Yeah.
Did you get to know Willie Mays pretty well?
You must have gotten to know Willie Mays at least a little bit in 1951 when he hit 477 for the Millers before he got called up to the Giants.
Willie Mays?
Yeah.
Willie Mays played here. Ted Williams played here.
Right.
Some of the greatest players of all time.
Carl Yastrzemski played here.
Can I add something to that, Dave? A few years ago, the All-Star Games in Milwaukee.
Sure.
And Sid and I went, and they had the day before, they had a like 50 greatest moments in baseball. And,
yep.
and Jack Morris was there, and Barry Bonds, and Willie Mays, who Sid didn't know if he would remember him or not. Well, there's Sid Hartman, he says, and he comes up to Sid, and it made Sid's day. And it was obvious that these two had quite a relationship.
Yeah, we drove to Milwaukee. On the way to Milwaukee, we stopped off at Madison.
Yeah, we had lunch with Barry Alvarez, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had lunch with Barry Alvarez and the guy who's the head coach right now. He was an assistant.
Paul Crist, yeah.
Paul Crist, yeah.
And another thing is we could get WCCO almost all the way to Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah, because remember Bud Selig was telling us, I listened to you guys a lot. He's a commissioner, but he worked out of Milwaukee. But, yeah, it was obvious that Sid and Willie had a pretty good relationship.
You know, that's pretty interesting because I've been over the years when I was more involved in sports memorabilia, had a lot of memorabilia shows. And Willie Mays, probably bottom 10% of being friendly with people.
Is that right?
Shows. Oh, he signs no eye contact. And people try to say, my dad took me to see you in Minneapolis in 50. He has no apparent interest in that. Unlike, you know, some people who are, I mean, Stan Musial was a very friendly guy.
How about Bob Feller?
Well, Feller would sign anything that moved.
Okay.
We brought Feller in about, I don't know how many times, and Bob, I'd pick him up at the airport, and he would say, what do you got me to sign? He said, you're paying me. You know, I'll sign anything for him. So I don't know if there's anything in America that's not signed by Bob Feller. And Bob had these big hands, and you always had a bunch of Sharpies, and at the end of the, and he carried a briefcase. And then at the end of the signing, you wanted to watch how many of your Sharpies would disappear because he'd scoop them up in his hand and throw in the briefcase. And one day he opened his briefcase, he must have had 100 Sharpies.
Really?
And from every signing he had ever done. But it was a friendly guy. And if you want to get him going, you say, do you think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame? And then stand back because he had pretty strong feelings on that. Sid, you must have known Bob Feller.
Huh?
You knew Bob Feller.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. Van Meter, Iowa. I used to have a pretty good museum down there in Van Meter. I want to talk a little bit about the 11 o'clock hour because we had a text message. You guys haven't talked to any Vikings yet. Well, we haven't talked Vikings yet. We haven't talked hockey yet. We haven't talked basketball. probably of those sports, the one making the most news right now is basketball. And Tom Thibodeau is going to join us. What time is that, Mike?
11:30. He told me he'd come on at 11:30 and visit with us. There's a lot to talk about right now.
Yeah, they signed Brandon. It looks like they signed Crawford, at least the rumors are. So they're starting to follow the bench. We will talk to him about that. We're going to get you involved. So listen when I give the phone calls. We have right now, we've got only one or two guests scheduled in the 11 o'clock hour. Good chance to get you involved. We always look forward to that. Don't always get the chance, so I'll give the numbers. You give us a call, and you'll be talking to us on the Sports Huddle with Sid, Dave, and Mike.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.